Your Hit Parade, starring Frank Sinatra.
Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men?
And now, smile a while with Lorenzo Jones and his wife, Belle.
Here's the Manhattan merry-go-round that brings you the bright side of life, that whirls you in music to all the big night spots of New York town, to hear the top songs of the week sung so clearly you can understand every word and sing them yourself.
This is the Golden Age of Radio. I'm Dick Bertel, and tonight we'll take you on another audio excursion back to radio's formative years. You'll hear the programs that made the era golden, and meet people who made those broadcasts a reality.
The Golden Age of Radio is brought to you by WTIC Radio and Cromwell Savings Bank. Now here is your host, Dick Bertel.
Good evening, and with me once again is radio historian, collector, Ed Corcoran. Ed, we're going to depart from our usual format tonight because we're so close to Christmas.
Yes, Dick, this, I think, is our eighth Christmas we spent together, and rather than have a guest, we're going to devote the entire show tonight to Christmas stories that were famous during the Golden Age of Radio.
And we don't have a guest tonight, as we usually do, but we have something in its place. We have complete programs.
Yes, I guess if there's any criticism of our show, Dick, is that we get these plots going, and we leave them to a certain point, and then we drop off, and people don't know what happens. So tonight, each episode will be complete, so there'll be no sitting on the edge of the chair wondering what happened.
We do get reaction to our program, and it literally comes from all parts of the country, doesn't it?
Yes, as I mentioned in one of the earlier shows, that because of the guests we were able to attract, these shows have national interest among collectors, and they're traded all over the United States, and some of them go overseas, because for this, you get air checks from the Armed Forces Library for a comparable show that we come out with. So I would say we're number one in the country as far as the number of guests we've had who were active in Radio, Dick, so I think we got something to be proud of here.
I wish I had copies of all the programs that we've done over the years. Yeah. I'll have to get in touch with the collector sometime and talk to him. You know, during the time of radio's golden age, when the Christmas programs were on the air, they became annual events. They were very important to us in our lives, maybe especially during the dark days of World War II. But we would listen to the same story year after year, wouldn't we?
That's exactly right. And two of them tonight we're going to play are of that nature, that were done at least 10 or 12, maybe 20 times. And in one of them, the last one, it kept getting better. They used to change the script slightly, change a word here and there, or change a character slightly, and it grew like vintage wine. These little improvements made the script like an old vaudeville act. Remember, they used to take years to perfect a vaudeville act?
Well, that's right.
Some of the Christmas shows were done that way. They were fine-tuned, so the latter editions were really just as good as writing can get.
Well, we're going to have a good example of that now, because I think that Our first show is a gem as far as production, as far as writing and characterization is concerned.
You're referring, of course, to The Couple Next Door.
I am referring to that couple.
Well, the reason I brought that one, Dick, is because you invited me on your show on Thanksgiving, your other show. When did you do that, by the way? And we did The Couple Next Door in their Thanksgiving preparation. I thought it would be a nice follow-up performance to show what happened to them during the Christmas season. And this is a rather typical and one of my favorite episodes of The Couple Next Door.
Is that all the breakfast you're going to eat?
That's all I got time for. Look, just give me another half cup of coffee, huh?
Give me a cup. By the way, aren't you going to pick up a Christmas tree before they're all picked over?
Oh, golly, yes.
Yeah. Oh, there's money in it. Get it quick.
Oh, boy, I need it, too.
Which reminds me, I do, too. I ordered a wooden salad bowl at that gift shop, and we don't have a charge account there. I have to pick it up today, and I'll need cash. $9.95, so just give me
$10. What, $9.95 for a wooden salad bowl?
It's a big one to use at buffet suppers. It's what Eleanor wants, and she's my best friend, and I happen to know she's giving us an electric warming tray to keep food warm, and that costs $18.50. So, frankly, I think you should even give Fred something, maybe a box of really good cigars or something, you know, like that.
Boy, I tell you, Christmas is getting out of hand. You know, it used to be that you gave somebody something because you wanted to. Now you find out how much they're spending on you, so you don't spend more.
Well, now let's not start all that. Just give me the money, dear.
Money, money, money. Every year we vow that we'll cut down. You know,
dear,
we haven't got it to spend now. We make up our Christmas budget and we just never stick to it.
Well, I know, but things turn out to cost more than we planned, or we remember somebody we didn't put on the list. Well, never mind that now, honey. I've got to make a list of all the things I have to do today. Among them, take Bobby to see Santa Claus at the store.
Oh, you are?
Did you want to?
Well, I mean, a man kind of wants to take his own son to see his first toy department and meet Santa Claus.
Well, you are certainly welcome to the job. I've got a million other things to do. Come home right after work and get him, and after you'll have him ready, and you might as well take Betsy, too.
Oh, sure, sure. Hey, that'll be fun, huh?
I hope so, dear.
Betsy, now look, I don't want to speak to you again. Do you understand? Now you stay by Daddy and stop wandering off like that. Bobby, no. Put that down. You mustn't touch everything.
Daddy,
yes,
Daddy.
It's a doggy. Your hands are sticky, so don't touch it.
Daddy, carry my overshoes.
Oh, honey, why did you take them off?
I'm so hot. Oh, look at the dollhouse. Look, Daddy.
Yeah, all right, now wait a minute. Let me check what I've got here. Let's see. Snowsuit, leggings, cap, mittens, Bobby's overshoes, your coat. Overshoes. Where are your mittens?
I don't know. My coat pocket, maybe.
Oh.
Oh, look, Daddy. The doll with the piano in the dollhouse. That's what I want for Christmas for my dollhouse.
Now, where's Bobby's wool scarf? Didn't he have a scarf?
I don't know. Oh, Daddy, look. There's a doll as big as I have.
No. Now, Bobby, please. No, son. You mustn't touch it. Here, now, give Daddy the lollipop, will you?
Oh, no!
Now, Bobby, look. Come on. Give it to me. Never go see Santa Claus.
No!
You want to see Santa Claus, don't you?
No!
Bobby, shh. Look, there he is. Now, come on. Sure you want to see Santa Claus. You see the little boy sitting on his lap? Look, Santa Claus will pick you up, and he'll ask you if you've been a good boy, see? And you tell him, oh, yes. Now, come on.
No!
Now, look, Daddy brought you all the way down here to see him. It's taken us half an hour to battle our way through this mob to get to him. Now, come on.
No.
Now, you stop that. You just stop that. Oh, son, listen to Daddy. Will you be Daddy's good boy? Now, look, Bobby. Santa Claus heard you crying. Look, he's motioning to you to come and see him.
No,
now stop it. Now, you just stop it.
Goodness, I didn't mean to get home so late, Auntie.
Oh, that's all right. You're here.
Let me help you with all those bundles.
Oh, good heavens, it isn't 6:45. I hope you all went ahead and ate dinner.
No, we waited. I thought you might be late, dear, shopping, so I put in a pork roast.
Oh.
Never hurts pork to cook a little longer.
Oh, Betsy must be starved.
Betsy and Bobby and their father are having a marvelous time in the basement. Doing what? I don't know. It's a surprise.
Didn't he take Bobby to see Santa Claus at the store and Betsy?
Oh, yes. I guess it was quite an experience. Came home looking as though he'd been put through the wringer. And laden down with so many packages, he looked like Santa Claus himself.
What did they buy?
I don't know. I was told not to come down to the basement. You're not supposed to either.
Must be a surprise for us. However, Bobby should be fed and put to bed.
What is going on down there?
Oh, honey, come on down, your home cat, and bring Aunt Effie, too.
Come on, Aunt Effie. All right, we're going. Go. Look out now. Don't trip on the basement stairs.
Oh, Mommy! It's the most wonderful thing! What in the world?
Now, look, it's just the beginning. You see, I wasn't going to show you until we got it all set up, but I can see now that it's going to take a lot more time than I thought.
Oh, Daddy, someone help. Wow, and it blows a whistle and everything, Mommy.
Yeah, well, I just set up a small part of the track to show the kids how it works, Now, just a second.
Oh, Daddy, but miles and miles of track, Mommy, and he's going to have it running all around the basement. See, Mommy, there's the engine and the passenger cars, and Daddy's got a freight train, too, but it isn't unpacked yet. And there's an oil car and a refrigerator car and a lot of other box cars and a caboose!
See? How about that, Bobby? You like that son, huh?
Mommy, isn't it wonderful? There's going to be tunnels and switches. Daddy's going to build a town. There's a railroad station and bank building and a store and a gas station and street lights that really go on.
Quite an idea, huh, Mommy?
Oh, Daddy's the best daddy in the whole world.
Yes, he certainly is. Aunt Effie, will you take Betsy and Bobby and go upstairs and get them washed up for dinner, please? Mm-hmm. I want Daddy to explain the train a little more to me.
Come on, children. Come on with Aunt Effie.
Now, look, before you say anything, let me tell you how it happened.
In other words, as I get it, just because Bobby didn't want to see Santa Claus and howled and yelled so you were embarrassed and took him to see the toy trains to distract him, and because he loved them so, you just plain bought him one. Two, in fact, a passenger train with a diesel engine and a freight train with a locomotive.
The passenger train's for Betsy and the freight train for Bobby.
I don't understand you, dear. You're the one who always says, don't buy the children everything they want. And last week you brawled me out for letting Betsy have something she saw that cost 19 cents. 19 cents?
But this is a little different, I think. This is something that they'll play with for years and years.
I'm not even going to ask you what all this cost. I'll bet you spent a fortune. And only this morning, I believe, I got a lecture on the money we spend for Christmas, money we don't have to spend.
Yeah, I know.
And if you had to buy a train, why didn't you start in a small way? Did you have to buy everything at once?
Yes.
Why?
I wanted it. I wanted a train, not just one train. I wanted a passenger train and a freight train. I wanted tunnels and switches and miles of track. Suddenly, as I stood there looking at this, it became the train that I always wanted and I never had. Then I thought of the $300 that tree company wants to operate on our oak trees to keep the carpenter ants from chewing them up. And I suddenly thought, let the darned old ants chew them up. I'm going to buy my kids a real railroad.
Your kids?
Okay, me.
Well, it's your money. You earn it. It's your railroad. But I am going to say this. I think we should get some plaster of Paris and build a mountain so we have a real tunnel going through the mountain. And then
Really?
Don't kiss me. Listen to me. Why don't we rig up something so we can have a real river? You know, a real river with water and tracks going over this bridge then. Look at this darling little water tower.
Yeah, and it works, honey. It works, yeah. And the railroad crossing has a real bell that clangs.
No,
The couple next door with Peg Lynch,
Alan Bunce, and also with Margaret Hamilton, who was a guest on the show. And she wasn't a wicked old witch this time. She came across very sweetly, and she was the maiden aunt that you heard there in that excerpt.
You know, you were talking a little while ago about Margaret Hamilton and Peg Lynch, and you were at the recent convention of the Society of American Vintage Radio Enthusiasts held in New Haven. And these people come, and you know them now on a first-name basis, don't you?
Yeah, that's really something. I'm a minor celebrity in my own right here. And in fact, I had dinner with Mandel Kramer. We had the whole evening together, and it was just thoroughly enjoyable to follow through with the interview we did about his television work and everything else. So I got a real big kick out of it, Dick.
But what about the rest of the people? For them, they didn't know him personally.
Well, he's a very personable individual. In fact, they all were. Hi Brown, the guest of honor, and some of the other people there. Will Jordan, a famous impersonator of Ed Sullivan. And, you know, you talk to the people. They're not up on the stage someplace. They're right down with you, and you can get to know them. And they remember you from year to year. And Hi Brown even made the comment that I think there was an 11-year-old boy there, and he knew every show that he had done, not only recently, but years gone by. And he was amazed that a person so young was that knew that much about his work. And he kind of changed his mind because his whole idea is modern radio. And he said, well, the old stuff historically is something that maybe I haven't really caught sight of. As a historical medium, it was really great.
Yes, it was. Hi Brown, of course, is the producer of the CBS Mystery Theater, for those who may not be familiar with his name. I understand that he did a series for that program out in Hollywood.
Yes, I guess sometime, I guess it was in the fall of this past year, he went out for, I think, 10 shows, and he used some of the Hollywood actors, so a little change of pace. I don't know who they were, but maybe next time we do a show, I'll try to get the names for you, Dick, but he did do that. And incidentally, I may be going out to Hollywood again myself. I had the call of the West. You know, the airline fare has almost doubled since the last time I went. I couldn't believe it. But if I do go out there, I hope to get a few more interviews to bolster the show.
That'll be marvelous. Well, let's have another program.
Well, this next show is another one of these favorites, which was done for many, many years on Grand Central Station. And it features another one of our past guests, Mason Adams. And this is a little more serious type of a drama. It's quite serious, and there is a message here, and it's it's quite a contrast to the first, you know, the funny side of Christmas. This is a rather serious note on Christmas.
Grand Central Station. You're on the right track with Pillsbury Snow Sheen Cake Flour.
As a bullet seeks its target, shining rails in every part of our great country are aimed at Grand Central Station, part of the nation's greatest city. Drawn by the magnetic force of the fantastic metropolis, day and night great trains rush toward the Hudson River, sweep down its eastern bank for 140 miles, flash briefly by the long red row of tenement houses south of 125th Street, dive with a roar into the 2.5-mile tunnel which curls beneath the glittering swank of Park Avenue, and then Grand Central Station! Crossroads of a million to private life, gigantic stage on which are played a thousand dramas daily.
Today, as each year at this season, Pillsbury Mills are presenting Grand Central Station's traditional Christmas play. In order not to interrupt in the middle of this inspiring drama, the Pillsbury folks have asked that no reference to their product should be made during the progress of the play.
And now, Pillsbury Mills presents with pride Grand Central Station's traditional Christmas play, a drama you will long remember. After the train from Albany pulled in, no one, not a single person, actually saw the young man with soft brown hair and soft brown eyes come through the gate. Still unseen, he walks the length of the great waiting room, now strangely tranquil as travel ebbs on Christmas Eve. Alone, he goes out the door, down the street, and up the broad marble stairs of the hospital. To the girl at the switchboard, he says not a single word, but gives her a card. She instantly recognizes the name and announces it to the hospital superintendent.
Dr. Mason to see you.
Mason? The Mason who applied for an internship?
Yes, Dr. Garrett. It is Dr. Mason of Albany, New York.
But that's impossible.
Shall I tell him you're too busy to see him?
No. Send him in.
Dr. Garrett will see you, sir. The first door to the left.
You are Dr. Garrett.
Dr. Mason? Are you Dr. Mason?
I'm sorry that I was delayed, Dr. Garrett.
But just 10 minutes ago, I...
Yes, I know. Just 10 minutes ago, you received a telegram.
Why, that's right. From your mother.
I know.
But, ma'am, look at it. It says...
that I was killed. Pay no attention to that telegram, Dr. Garrett.
But I don't understand. I was so disturbed by the wire, I counted so much on your being here tonight, Christmas Eve. A night always busy with calls.
You are short of interns.
Oh, yes. Mason, these are the slums. Walk through block after block and you won't see a doctor, Shingle. Not one. The people here are too poor. They only know one doctor, the intern, and his ambulance.
And tonight, night of mercy and goodwill, they would have cried out in vain.
Well, now that you have come, I won't have to say to the suffering, wait, there's only one ambulance tonight, and that's out on call. Wait and suffer. I've no one to send to you, because Dr. Mason was killed. Oh, it's good you're here, Mason. It's good.
It is good to be here, Dr. Garrett.
Well, you'd better get started. Now, here. Take this slip down to the storeroom. See that they give you a warm sheepskin coat.
Thank you, Dr. Garrett.
And a pair of mittens. And from there, go to the ambulance room. I'll have your driver waiting for you. His name is Mac.
My name is Mac. The chief says I drive your crate tonight.
Crate?
Crate, jalopy, sick buggy, ambulance, take your pick.
I see what you mean.
You green interns are all the same way. The first time you spy your ambulance, your eyes pop wide like you've seen a heavenly chariot or something. Not me. I've been driving this one for 8 rotten years.
An ambulance, Mac, is a sacred thing. It is a chariot of mercy.
The way you raw interns start dishing out the sweet talk, butter wouldn't melt in your mouth. Uh-oh, 2 bells. Come on, Mason, that's our call.
234 South Street. 234 South Street.
Yeah, all you new interns, put on the white uniform and your face starts to shine. All you fellas need is a white horse, a bunch of knights out to save humanity.
Why are you so bitter, man?
Why shouldn't I be? Wasn't for you, I'd be home with the wife right now.
You truly believe it is my fault?
Yeah, if you hadn't showed up, this ambulance would be parked in the garage for crying out loud. I would have had the night off like on a decent job.
To you, driving an ambulance is just a job. A job like any other?
Yep, just like any other job. Boy, I'll be glad when this shift is over.
It's Christmas Eve, Mac.
You're telling me.
This night, at least, you could forget that driving an ambulance is a job. This night, at least, you could look upon it as an errand of mercy.
An errand of mercy? You know where we're going?
To help someone afflicted.
Afflicted with alcohol, you mean? I'll give you 2-1 this we're making a stew car.
Stew car?
Yeah, Mason. We're risking our next tearing through traffic to give some drunk a whiff of smelling salt.
Any man who cries out for help, whether he be brimful of drink or empty of blood, his call should be answered.
Yeah, says you. Come on, Mason, make it snappy. We ain't got all night. What did I tell you? A no-good drunk. Here's your bag, Doc.
Thank you, Mac. I won't need it.
But he's out cold, Mason. Come on, give him a whiff of this stuff and let's blow.
Quiet, Mac. Come. Come. Open your eyes, sir.
He calls the drunk, sir. Come on, Mason. Give him a smell of the ammonia, will you?
Come, sir. Open your eyes.
That's right, Mason. You just talk to him and he'll talk right now.
Where am I? Oh, my head is... Why was everybody laughing?
Put your arm around my shoulder. That's good. Now, let me help you to stand up straight. There. Now you feel better.
Why, he's all right. I mean, look at that.
Suddenly I feel fine. My head's so clear.
Of course. All you needed was to stand on your own 2 feet.
Oh.
Remember that. Stand on your own feet.
Gosh, Doc. That's wonderful medicine you give me.
Medicine? What kind of gag are you pulling? He didn't give you no medicine. There was nothing the matter with you. You toss off a beer and you lay down in the street like you're out cold and we waste an ambulance on you. I got a good mind to take a poke at
that
you.
That will be enough, Mac. Tell me, sir, what is your name?
Come on, give me a name. He's got to make out his report.
Pete Linton, Doctor.
Peter, you won't lose faith again. You will stand on your feet and look bravely at life with hope and courage.
Come on, Mason, you're wasting our time. Let's get going.
Doc.
Yes, Peter.
A Merry Christmas to you, Doc.
Thank you, sir. A Merry Christmas to you.
Water Street, third floor.
Well, Mac, what's this call going to be? A birth or a death?
I don't know, Mason, but I don't like this one. There's something about this call. It gives me a funny chill all of a sudden.
Because it's in your neighborhood?
No, Mason. What do you think this call is going to be?
Is it because of your wife?
My wife? Stop that kind of talk, will you, Mason?
Is this still a rotten job, Mac, now that you're able to rush a doctor to her side? Is this ambulance still a crate, now that it's speeding to answer your own wife's cry of pain?
Stop it, will you? You're trying to make me think something's happened to my wife. I ain't afraid. I'll tell you again. Driving this crate is still a job, and a bum one at that.
And the 8 years?
Rotten years. Wasted years. The money I could have made, I could have had my own garage and repair shop.
That is true.
And the long, rotten hours, driving all night, twisting in and out of the L-pillar, skidding on a slippery car tracks. For 8 years, I've been...
Why, man? Why... Do it.
How many times do I have to tell you that nothing in this whole cockeyed world would make me sit behind this wheel, except my wife? If it wasn't for Ellie, I'd...
What's the matter, Mac?
Nothing, I guess. That house we just passed, that was mine, and the lights are out.
Is that unusual?
No. It just means Ellie's not in the house. She's probably gone down to the corner as far as the drugstore. Yeah, Ellie walks there every night about this time with our dog and...
Yes, Mac?
The call we're going to is that drugstore?
Yes, Mac.
Mason, you got a hunch what it is. Tell me what it is.
It is not a birth, Mac.
Let me through! Let me through! Let me... Ellie! Mason, do something! You gotta do something! Please!
We will take her to the hospital, Mac. Next call will be ours.
Get ready?
Yes. The other ambulance just went out.
Are you crazy? My wife is upstairs in the operating room, and you want me to go out and drive?
There are people who need us, Matt. Our work tonight is not yet done.
But Ellie needs me. What do I care about other people?
There are people, Matt, who will cry out for help, as your wife did. We will answer.
Not me. I ain't moving.
It is Christmas Eve.
Christmas Eve. What a Christmas present I got.
64 West Street.
It is our turn.
64 West Street.
All right, Mason.
64 West Street.
But this is my last trip for tonight. No, not for tonight. Forever. I'm through. All washed up. I'm through for good.
Terribly sorry, Mac. We did the best we could.
Dying. Ellie's dying.
She asked for you just once, Mac, while you were out on the West Beach call. Then she lapsed into coma.
Ellie. Isn't there a chance, Doc Garrett?
I'm sorry. Terribly sorry.
While I'm out with the crate, my wife calls for me, and now she's unconscious. Think of others. Think of others, he said, because it's Christmas Eve. What are you going to say now, Mason? You took me from her. You made me go out and drive that rotten ambulance while she was...
You went to help others. To bring aid to the suffering.
A lot of consolation, that is.
Remember how the old woman blessed you with tears in her eyes.
I can't think of nothing but Ellie's going. You and your big ideas and your fine speeches. What do you know about sorrow and suffering?
All that there is to know, my son.
Just now, when you said that for a second, you got old. You look more than 1,000 years old. I must be seeing things on account Ellie's leaving me, and I'm crazy. Crazy with grief.
Grief and sorrow for you. Yet for others, how much you do to relieve them of that pain.
It's funny, Mason, but...
Yes, ma'am.
But when you said those words, I thought of my 8 years. The 8 rotten years. And they didn't seem so rotten no more. Now I kind of like them.
You should like them. You should glory in them. 8 years of bringing a healer to the suffering. 8 years of rushing the torn and the smashed to the hands of the mender.
Your words just take the pain right out of me. They just draw it out.
Now that your work for this night is finished, I will walk home with you, Mac.
Go home? While Elliot died?
Yes. That is what I suggest. Come with me.
Okay, if you say so, Mason. But for the life of me, I don't know why I take your word. What a break. What a rotten break I got on Christmas Eve.
You love her a great deal, don't you? Soon, it will be midnight.
A Merry Christmas.
How did she greet you each night when you returned from your driving?
How did Ellie? Why do you ask that, Mason?
Tell me, Mac. I want you to say it.
She...
Tell me.
She was like a kid. She'd go out and put on the porch light. It didn't matter what kind of weather it was. I used to pull her out for it. She'd put on the porch light and stand outside there waiting for me.
Waiting for the shining night, returning from his errand of mercy.
As soon as she'd see me come around that next corner, she'd call to me.
And now, will you continue your driving? Now that...
I'm sticking to it, Mason. Even though Ellie won't be around, I'm sick.
This is your corner.
Yeah. Mason, the light, our porch light, it's on.
Look to your house, my son.
Your eyes, your face. Mason! Mason! Where are you?
Look to your house, my son.
No. No. It can't be.
Mom!
It's Ellie. Ellie, darling, it is you.
Mom!
Thank God. Thank God. And forgive me. I did not know who you were.
Today's Grand Central Station drama, Miracle for Christmas, was written by Jay Bennett and starred Mason Adams as Mac and Barry Kroger as Dr. Mason, with James Van Dyke as Dr. Garrett, Gilbert Mack as the father, and Madeline Pierce as the nurse. This is your narrator, Cy Harris, wishing you a Merry Christmas for Pillsbury and saying goodbye from Grand Central Station until next week for Pillsbury. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Grand Central Station, that was a mainstay in our home, I'll tell you, during the 1940s and so. Well, Ed, the classic of classics, as far as Christmas is concerned, perhaps someone would dispute this and say Lionel Barrymore's interpretation of Scrooge, because that was a radio program for so many years. But as far as I am concerned, Fred Allen's Christmas skit was the classic.
Yes, it certainly was. It started, as I mentioned earlier, back in the middle 30s, and it went all the way till he went off the air, some 20 years, and each year they did polish up the script a little bit, but it was still the same basic storyline about Santa Claus going on strike, and I look forward to it, and I'm sure you did, and you were growing up, because Christmas wasn't Christmas without Fred Allen.
No, that's right, that's right. And this story, and of course, Minerva Pius was always featured as Mrs. Santa Claus, wasn't she?
Yes, that's right.
And also, she also doubled?
Yeah, she did other parts, and also Parker Fenley was in it, and as well as Peter Donald, and Kenny Delmore, who all were on the show at one time or another, so it's kind of like old friends here tonight. Little did I ever think when I listened to that when I was a kid that I'd meet these people and get to know them, but they're there, and it's really a great thing for me to know them personally now. And, of course, Fred Allen has left us many years ago, but I think this is one of the greatest things he ever did, and I like to dedicate this to Fred Allen, his memory, because a legacy of humor. This is really the highlight of his writing career and his acting career. And
this has to be the living end as far as Fred Allen's humor is concerned. Santa Claus goes on strike.
Tonight, old Santa shows his claws in a modern tale called Santa Claus Goes on Strike, or Jingle Bells Shall Not Ring Tonight. Music, maestro.
Special announcement. Santa Claus will not ride this Christmas. In a terse bulletin issued from his North Pole igloo today, Santa says, quote, "I am on a sit-down strike. I refuse to ride this Christmas," unquote. Rumors flood the country.
A report from Miami, Florida says, 200 families stop building chimneys on their cabanas. Do not expect Santa Claus. At Rutland, Vermont, a little girl says,
"I wrote Santa Claus a letter airmail and got no answer. He ain't coming."
At Detroit, Michigan, a labor official says,
"Santa Claus better ride, or the Teamsters Union will pull out every reindeer from here to Nome, Land."
At Madison Square Garden, New York City, school children hold monster mass meeting. Tiny spokesman says,
"Santa Claus can't let us down. 200,000 American children have appointed me their spokesman. I'm off to see Santa Claus now. James, my jet scooter."
"Well, come in, little boy. What are you doing way up here at the North Pole?"
"Is this Santa Claus igloo?"
"Yes, Sonny. I'm Mrs. Claus. Who are you?"
"I'm Buddy Jones."
"Are you lost, Sonny?"
"No. I'm here to see why Santa Claus refuses to ride this year."
"I'm glad you come, son. I've been arguing with the old thumpet all week, and he refuses to budge."
"Where is Santa Claus now, Mrs. Claus?"
"He's in the next room there, tuning his reindeer bells and sulking."
"Can I see Santa?"
"'Twon't do you no good, son, but I'll get him for you." "Hey, Santa!"
"I ain't no use in coaxing, Ma. I ain't a going."
"Stupid, you got company."
"Who?"
"I'm Buddy Jones, Santa Claus."
"Well, don't mean nothing to me, small fry."
"Is this awful rumor true, Santa Claus?"
"Yep, I ain't riding, son."
"But this is Christmas Eve, Santa. Trees are lighted. Millions of trusting children have hung up their stockings. The world is waiting for you."
"Well, the world can wait. I ain't a riding."
"But Santa..."
"Ain't no use, Nipper. He's stubborn."
"No, I ain't not neither stubborn. I'm just sick of being Santa Claus. The world don't appreciate nothing. Squabbling, striking, spying, warring."
"But you can't quit, Santa. You must have a reason."
"Oh, got plenty of reason, Sprout."
"As spokesman for 200,000 kiddies, I demand a statement."
"Well, what is it you want to know, Shaver?"
"Why won't you ride tonight, Santa Claus?"
"Well, Sonny, I'll tell you. Come here, sit down here on my lap." "Son, I've been Santa Clausing it ever since the world began. For 1948 years, I've been bringing people presents every Christmas, trying to spread joy. My intentions has been good, but my reward has been nothing but heartaches and misery. The first trouble I had was way back in ancient Rome. It was Christmas Eve in the court of Nero. The emperor was playing a violin concerto.
The chimney sweep?
I'm Santa Claus, Nero, bearing Christmas gifts for your majesty.
Ultimus Nauseum, what is it? Another basket of figs from the Rome Kiwanis Club?
My gift is a trinket rare, Nero. So rare it hasn't even been invented yet. Here.
Gramercy, loud. What is this tiny golden box?
It's a cigarette lighter, Nero. Turn that little wheel.
God's blood, it flames!
Merry Christmas, Nero!
It flames! Rome has scoffed at Nero! Nero will have his revenge!
Hey, watch that lighter, Nero! You're setting fire to them draperies!
I can't make Rome hot with my music, eh? I'll make Rome hot another way! Revenge!
Look
revenge.
Out, Nero!
Fire! Fire!
So you see, son, if it wasn't for Santa Claus, Rome wouldn't have burned that time.
Gosh, that was too bad, Sam.
See, there I was trying to spread good cheer, and what did I get? The first hot foot in history.
But that was 2,000 years ago, Santa Claus. You shouldn't hold a grudge that long.
Well, Nero was just a prologue to my trouble, son. A few centuries later, I set out to bring a present to Napoleon and Josephine. I'll never forget that Christmas, son. Josephine was sitting on her cheesy davenport. Napoleon opened the door.
Oh,
nephew.
Oh, voilà. I am detour on the way to Waterloo, especially to say au revoir.
Oh, mon lover, mon nephew, we're
here. Un moment, and your nephew is away. C'est la guerre.
I will be faithful.
Bien. If quelqu'un man dare to pay court to my Josephine, I will kill him. Touché.
Your petite Josephine has no other boyfriend, nephew. You swear.
Eh bien. Mon big pee-pee one.
I have a farewell present for you. I will it fetch you with kiss you.
Eh bien, oh, mademoiselle, from any place far.
Who goes there? Who is coming through the fireplace?
Merry Christmas! Merry Christmas!
Sacré bleu! You have come to woo my Josephine, gigolo wolf.
Hold on. Put down that truncheon.
Ah, voilà, cochon.
Josephine returns, nephew.
Oh, with the mistletoe, you sly pussycat.
Oui. Oh, I forgot it is Christmas Eve. What can be keeping Santa Claus?
Santa? Mon Dieu, you are expecting the chap in the red suit?
Oui, nephew. Don't you think Santa Claus will come?
Not tonight, Josephine.
Yes. Yes, sonny, Napoleon gave me a concussion that Christmas. Running out of the castle, I fell in a moat. My ermine got wet and come to life. My collar and one cuff got away.
But you can't stay mad at the world because years ago one crazy Frenchman mushed you up, Santa Claus.
Well, things has happened since, sonny. Another Christmas, I got a raw deal in a suburb of England. It was called the American Colonies. I dropped in at the house of a jockey named Paul Revere. Well, the cottage had no chimney, so I peeked in at the window. Mrs. Revere was carving a Christmas turkey. Paul come a-gimping into the room.
Christmas dinner ready, Effie?
Yes, Paul. Pull up a chair.
No, no. Oop, no. Set my plate on the mantelpiece.
Can't you set down yet, Paul Revere. That ride was last April.
Through every Middlesex village and farm ain't once around Central Park, Effie.
Well, you ought to try and set down for Christmas, Paul. It'll be a nice present for your spy.
Who's that?
Might be a British spy, Paul.
Send me my gun, Effie. Who's there? Whig or Tory?
Merry Christmas, Paul Revere. It's me, Santa Claus.
So what?
I've got your Christmas present, Paul. It's a cushion stuffed with fuzz from Delaware peaches.
For me to sit on?
You bet.
Don't let him in.
I ain't sat down for 8 months, Effie. That fuzz sounds mighty tempting.
Might be some enemy trick, Paul.
No, I'm Santa Claus. Honest engine, Mrs. Revere. Open up.
I got my gun, Effie. I'll open the door a crack.
Merry Christmas!
Oh, look at his suit!
A red coat. Take this.
Well, son, when I got back to my sleigh and sat down, I was mighty glad I still had that cushion full of Delaware peach fuzz. You see, son, the world's given old Santa plenty of trouble.
Gee, Santa, you've certainly had a lot of trouble.
Well, that's why my spirit's broken, sonny. You see, being Santa Claus is just a pain in one century after the other. I'm giving the world back to Rand and McNally, I'm sure.
Santa, have pity on us kids. We'll have no toys.
No, Santa ain't a-moving, son. This is one Christmas I'm going to enjoy in peace. What's that clock striking?
It's 12 o'clock.
Midnight, eh? Well...
It's Christmas Day, Santa Claus.
Don't mean nothing to me. I'm taking it easy. I'm staying right here.
Won't you change your mind, Santa?
I ain't getting kicked around again this Christmas.
Please, Santa Claus.
Oh, shucks. Hush your crying, son. Hey, Ma.
Yes, Santa?
Where's my mittens, my bag, my reindeer, my sleigh?
Santa, you ain't a-going.
Yep, I'm a-going, Ma.
Honest, Santa Claus.
Yep, son, I changed my mind.
Oh, thank you, Santa.
Christmas ain't Christmas without Santa Claus. I'm giving the world one more chance.
Can I have a statement for all the kiddies, Santa?
You bet you can, sonny. Just say, it's Merry Christmas. Hi, old Donder. Hi, old Blitzen.
Santa Claus Goes on Strike with Fred Allen. Delightful. We'll be back right after this message from our sponsor.
This evening, the folks at the Cromwell Savings Bank would like to dispense with their usual commercial message scheduled for this time in order to extend season's greetings to you, one and all. It is their hope that your family will be joined together in spirit as well as actual physical presence during this season of the year when family unity is so important to us all. It's the hope, too, of your friends at Cromwell Savings that the spirit of unity and brotherhood, so apparent now, will carry over into the new year. And so with Christmas little more than 50 hours away, Mr. Arthur E. Webster, Jr., President, and the entire Cromwell Savings Bank family wish you and your family a most happy and safe Christmas and a positive new year. As 1975 approaches, they promise to continue their efforts, as has been the case for over 100 years, to keep Cromwell Savings a friendly bank in a friendly town.
Well, you know, it's been great listening to these shows. There are so many others that come to mind. As I say, Lionel Barrymore, and you remember the story that Bing Crosby would do with regularity, the small one.
Yes, we did that one of our, you know, our earlier shows. Yeah, there were many, many of them, and I think maybe next year we'll do it again. And speaking of next year, Dick, we're going to start off the new year with a bang with Robert Anderson, a top playwright and very active in radio. So I hope we can keep up that pace for the rest of the year.
That's right. That's right. He was associated with so many big shows, Cavalcade of America,
U.S. Steel Hour, among others. And, of course, he wrote any number of successful plays and movies. So, married to Teresa Rice. So, he's really one of the top men in that field.
Yes. And you'll get an insight as to what it was like to write for radio, because we have never featured a writer of his stature before.
Yeah, particularly on prestige shows. He wasn't a hack writer. He did only the top shows. So we're getting it from the viewpoint of that level, not just the guy that knocks out four or five scripts a week kind of thing.
Robert Anderson will be our guest next month here on the Golden Age of Radio. Let's take this opportunity to wish our listeners a very Merry Christmas, Ed.
Yes, and of course the Happy New Year, and I hope they'll join us for our efforts next year with the Golden Age, Dick.
And until next time, this is Dick Bertel.
This is Ed Corcoran.
Good night.
The Golden Age of Radio has been brought to you by WTIC and Cromwell Savings Bank, located at Main and West Streets in Cromwell, a friendly bank in a friendly town. The Golden Age of Radio was produced by Bill Grasty and Dick Bertel.
Pillsbury Snow Sheen Cake Flour brings you Grand Central Station.